At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein stands ready to take your finance and investment questions and share his unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Thursday, June 27th, 2024 edition, and I'm excited to be back with you answering your finance and investment questions and really helping you take that next step in your own version of financial freedom. We're in a very interesting market dynamic that we have going on, an economic dynamic. We have the election really kicks off today, right, with the first presidential debate. And this is an environment that most people are not used to. They're still thinking about 08. They're still thinking that the world hasn't changed. And it truly has. You know, post 08, post COVID, it's turned into a deficit economy, where budgets or fiscal dominance reigns supreme. And that creates different trends in the markets. Different asset classes outperform. You see that with equities outperforming bonds, for example, but there's a lot of subcategories to that as well. So we're here to unpack all of this, give you the real story, not the headlines that are happening in CNBC just to get you to pay attention. It's really about what is happening on the ground so that you can make truly informed decisions. Watching CNBC is not an informed decision. If you just watch CNBC and that's all the place that you get your financial information from, you are, you're selling yourself short and your entire portfolio short. There's so much information out there, and that can be a good thing if you know how to adjust that attention, direct that attention to the right places. Sometimes it can feel like drinking out of a fire hose. We are here to do our best to whittle that down to maybe a gallon jug, okay? And make it easier for you to drink, feel better about your financial situation, and move in the right direction. Now, we do this by answering your finance and investment questions, number one. That's our first goal each day. Now, I have topics that I will bring to the table for us to discuss, and you can certainly call in and talk about those. We love to hear those. I know we get a lot of questions on individual stocks, and that's fine, but we love feedback as well. So if I'm talking about something and you have an input, something to add that you feel has value to the audience, don't hesitate to pick up the phone and give us a call. For all of you, it's 888-99-CHART. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show or any future shows. Now, in just a bit, we're going to talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But first, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hi, Justin and Luke. I was calling looking into the stock Adobe. It's ticker symbol ADBE Alpha Delta Bravo Echo. I was just wondering if I saw that on Morningstar, it had it listed as undervalued. I was wondering if right now it would be a good price point to get in on and if it would be a good stock to consider purchasing right now or if there's any red flags in its metrics that you guys could evaluate. I'd appreciate hearing about it on the show. Thank you.
Adobe, this is a volatile name and certainly a name that should be on everyone's watch list, but yeah, what is the right price for that? Now, it had come down from a high of around $635 per share. Recent low is around $435. Now we're back up to $546. So pretty big move over the past couple of weeks. And I like a lot about the company. I like its cash flows, about $6 billion. Free cash flow, trailing 12 months. Return on equity, 32%. Return on invested capital, 26%. Those are all positive numbers. This is a good example of the type of quality name that you'd want to be looking to add to your portfolio at the right price. And the type of name that dividend investors would completely ignore because they don't pay a dividend. But they're taking that cash flow, and what are they doing with it? They're buying back shares consistently. So I like all of that. Now, the question is, what is that valuation? Right now, price to sales is 12 times. That's pretty high. Price to book around 16 and a half times, also very high. And enterprise value to EBITDA around 31 and a half, also very high. So the valuations here are just, I don't want to say extreme, but elevated. Definitely elevated. And growth is, you know, it's okay. Last quarter, revenue growth was 10% year over year, earnings around 15% year over year. And this year's earnings are supposed to go up 13%. Now there's some AI, this in part, it's an AI play. But software in general is starting to see some softness. Now, is that because companies are laying off workers? Maybe they're paying for less seats in Adobe software, potentially. I know we pay for an Adobe software suite for, you know, our content creation and the like. So it's a good business. But I wouldn't buy it here. It's not a name that's on our watch list. Well, it's a name on our watch list, but it's not near a level that we would want to pick it up. Let me give you a good level here. 356. At that level, that's where I would pick it up. $356 per share. Thanks for the call on Adobe. I like that you're looking at a quality name with good profitability and good balance sheet. Buying back shares. That's big. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes, and our main focus point concerns this story. Social Security COLA 2025. Retirees face challenges. The 2025 cost of living adjustment, or COLA for short, for Social Security benefits is shaping up to be one of the lowest in recent years, potentially posing a significant challenge for retirees living off of fixed incomes like Social Security. So we'll dig into that story, among others, and those others include one about the jobs market. There are, when you see the jobs number the first Friday of every month, there's actually two different surveys that are being done to give you the number of the unemployment rate, as well as the number of jobs created. And then you're also getting a weekly unemployment claim number, right? So there's a lot of jobs data coming in on a regular basis. One, the one that looks at employers, looks strong. The one that looks at households, that one looks relatively weak. Where is the truth? Where does the truth lie? So we're going to look at those numbers. Also, deficits. Everyone's talking about the deficit. And certain politicians want to get the deficit in order. Others don't. What would it mean if we do get a fiscal authority that is conservative? What would that mean for stocks and asset prices? So we'll look at that as well. So those are the things are on the docket for me, but ultimately it's about what's on your docket. What is on your mind? What are you thinking about? Think about buying, think about selling, maybe an asset class, maybe a big money move that you are contemplating. We are here for all of it. We also have voice bank questions that will play. And I also have some questions that came in via the comment section over on YouTube. And of course, we welcome your finance and investment questions at 888-99-CHART. Now we're heading into a short break. And on the other side, I will look at today's market activity. And please remember, you can call anytime and leave your question on the InvestTalk Voice Bank at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
So I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc., does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. It's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, let's take a look at the market today. It was a modest up day. Really, small caps did the best, up over 0.5% there. You had the dollar was down on some dovish Fed talk. Gold was up nicely, but it was still kind of a mixed bag. Some stocks had some good days, others some terrible days. So it was still a positive overall. You had the weekly jobless claims that came in a bit lower than expected, but more importantly, and this is another lesson on the jobs front, is that headline weekly jobless claims is not nearly as important as the continuing claims for unemployment. I say this all the time. It's not how many people are filing for unemployment in a given week. It's how many of those are staying on the unemployment rolls. If you lose your job 1 week and you get another job the next week, you're probably fine, right? You might have missed a week of pay, but you know, you can get through it. You can pay your bills. You still feel pretty good about what's going on, right? You're on unemployment for an extended period of time. You can't get a job. Obviously, there's something wrong. And so that's always most important. And that number, the continuing claims, moved to a 2.5-year high, up to 1.84 million on the unemployment, continuous claims for unemployment. So that is showing you the labor market is certainly weakening. That's another reason why I think you had the gold up today. And what else do we have? Pending home sales, that was down 2% month over month and now down 6.6% year over year. You had some inflation data that surprised the downside, so that was a bit of a positive. And you had the durable goods orders, that was down again month over month. So it was an interesting day, a lot of numbers. The Kansas City Fed Manufacturing Production Index, that came out at negative 11 from the negative 1 last month. So you're definitely seeing economic weakness, and I would not be shocked if the Fed cuts rates in the next, I would say, 2 meetings. I think that it's starting to become more clear that maybe September is the move. You now have a 2/3 chance that there will be at least one rate cut between now and September. So July looks like the month where the Fed will set up a rate cut in September. At least that's what it's looking like so far. The economic data is moving that direction. Now let's go back to the InvestTalk voice bank for a question that came in earlier on 888-99-CHART.
Hi there, this is Joe from Nashville calling. I had a question on the wash sale. And my question basically is this. If I were to sell, say, 1,000 shares of a stock, and then within the 31 days, I were to repurchase 100 shares, does the wash sale only apply to 100 shares, or does it wipe out my loss for the entire 1,000-share lot that I originally sold? I hope that makes sense, and look forward to hearing your answer on the program. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that would only apply to the 100 shares that you rebought. So yeah, it's not going to apply to that full 1,000 shares that you sold. I would say, if you're unsure, just wait a little longer. It's not that big a deal. Market's probably not going to run away from you in the next few weeks, right? When you sold something, or what I would say is buy something similar, right? You have Exxon, and you want to buy it back for whatever reason. Go buy Chevron for 31 days, then sell it and, you know, buy back Exxon. There's almost every stock in the market has a close brother, right, cousin in that industry that has similar size, similar volatility, similar profitability, etc. And I think that's usually the best way to get around the wash rule if there is one. Now we're moving into a short break. Still to come, YouTube comment questions and my main focus point. So give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Justin Klein is here and ready to tackle your questions.
Curious if you think it'd be better for me to let it go and spend money elsewhere.
Well, first off, never take one man's opinion as gospel, including my own.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
When you give a recommendation on your show for a buy-in, like an entry point to buy a stock, if I already own it, should I go ahead and be looking to sell it?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
In today's market, more than ever, you need unbiased investing guidance because it can help you achieve financial freedom. Well, you've come to the right place, InvestTalk. And Justin Klein is here now taking your calls live. So step up with your questions, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point today concerns Social Security and cost of living adjustments for 2025. And, you know, retirees may, for some retirees, it may cause a challenge. Now, the forecast for COLA has now been adjusted downward. Okay, it was 3.2%. Then it was 2.7. And now it's 2.6. Now, the current inflation rate is closer to 3 to 3.5, depending on, you know, which inflation gauge you're looking at. Now, a lot of people thought last year's COLA of 3.2 was not enough. According to the Senior Citizens League, more than two-thirds of retirees felt that the 2024 adjustment was insufficient. Now, that's always interesting because history says senior citizens, those that are collecting Social Security, their basket of goods is very different than the average person. They're not driving very much, so gas doesn't really matter too much to them. They aren't usually buying a lot of clothes. They may travel some, right, if they're younger. But in general, right, the older you are, they call it the go-go years in the 60s, and then the no-go years once you get into your, you know, 80s and 90s. And you're not spending a lot of money. So history says, actually, the average retiree spends 1% less every year than inflation. Meaning if inflation was 3%, they typically only feel 2% of that. Okay. Now, this year, or 2025, COLA was initially projected to be smaller than last year due to waning inflation, and now it's going even lower, like I said, from 2.7 to 2.6. Now, this is just an estimate. This is from the Senior Citizen League. And so it's based on the third quarter using consumer price index for urban wages. Urban wage earners. There we go. Urban wage earners. Now, a lot of people have argued to use something called a CPI E, which is one that is has a basket of goods that's more tied to the elderly and retirees specifically. But nobody expects that to happen anytime soon. But this is clear that if you are a retiree and you are truly feeling the impact of inflation on a day-to-day basis, that this could be a factor when looking at your full retirement picture. This is something we do with clients is we sit down, we figure out, okay, what does their Social Security look like? We index their expenses to inflation, and then, you know, the system adjusts based on COLA. And that historically, like I said, you don't get the average retiree spending so much that they're outstripping inflation. I don't want to say it's rare, but it's not nearly as common as those that, you know, they keep their Lie is pretty simple. Their expenses day to day are pretty low. They're pretty fixed because, you know, they're focused more on their family. Maybe if they travel a lot. But if you travel a lot, you're probably not relying on Social Security, right? If you have the money to travel, Social Security going up 1 or 2% in a particular year or a few years less is probably not adjusting your situation dramatically. Now, it's those that are on a fixed income, that are on a low income, that, you know, are barely getting by. Maybe they didn't save enough. Maybe Social Security is the vast majority of their income in retirement. For those people, this could be an issue. But for most people, I don't think it will be. But something to watch and adust for as this COLA comes in. We'll get a number at the end of the third quarter. Now, I hope you've been telling your friends about the Invest Talk podcast in video form over on YouTube. And we get questions submitted via the comment section over there. And here's one that came in a few days ago. Audio Obsession 8845 says, and this was today, it says, Walgreens WBA took a huge tumble today. Looks like capitulation and forward looking. The multiple is tremendously low, even after the $2.80 revised guidance. There are only a few big players for prescription. What am I missing? Am I catching a falling knife getting into this big drop, or is this an opportunity to be a buyer when everyone else is selling? Simple. This is a value trap. It's been a value trap for a while, and this is exactly why you don't want to rely solely on earnings projections. Remember, earnings, it's an accounting number. And there are ways to, say, manipulate it. And that's why you have to dig deeper. That's why we did that webinar, which you can find over on our YouTube channel, calling Digging Deeper Than Dividends. And what are we focused on? We focused on profitability metrics, like return on equity, return on invested capital, return on assets. We focused on cash flow and solid balance sheets. And right now, a metric we talked about, times interest earned, is negative 24. Their return on invested capital is negative 16. Their free cash flow is negative $1.7 billion and headed lower. So no, this is not capitulation. This is the market coming to a final realization that Walgreens is likely to go bankrupt. And no, you should not be buying this. Now, this is Invest Talk. Sid from North Carolina, hang on. You are next. But give us a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Let's say you've been thinking about learning a new language. Okay, why? I mean, how would it come in handy? And where would you want to use it? Could it be that you have an upcoming international trip? Or maybe you want to connect with family members or friends from a different culture? I think you should know about Rosetta Stone. With millions of users, it's been the world's most trusted language learning program for 30 years. Rosetta Stone is available on your desktop or as an app with audio companion and the ability to download lessons offline. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It has a built-in, patented speech recognition engine called True Accent. So as you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you pronounce words. With Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's an intuitive process designed for long-term retention. You really learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. Rosetta Stone is an amazing value, so your special skill set is within easy reach. You know you want to do this, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, InvestTalk listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off now at rosettastone.com/today.
Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vanta automates compliance for SOC 2,
ISO 27001, and more, saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vanta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off.
No two portfolios are alike, and every investor has a unique set of circumstances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go talk to Sid in North Carolina. He's asking about Nike. I'm assuming you are inquiring about this big drop after hours to a new 52-week low around $82 per share on a revenue projection miss. So are you thinking that this is time to pick it up?
Hi, Justin. Thanks. Yeah, almost you are right. This stock is in my radar since it was 120. And I also looked at that it's almost like 40% down in last 3 years, even though it's one of the best brand in a world. But today's result was even disappointing. So do you think this is the right time or is still a falling knife?
Well, I would say that the next major support is around $75. So it's at 82 now. So I would... You know, I might be a little patient on it and see where this kind of settles out. Usually when you get these big news events, it takes about 3 days for the market to kind of find some footing here. And we'll see, you know, this is just announced after hours and it's an illiquid market. So we'll see where we open tomorrow. You know, Nike has some headwinds. Number one is China. The Chinese are buying more domestic brands right now versus those abroad. Maybe it's geopolitical, culturally, whatever it is, that's the case. So there's that. Also, they're losing out in the running department to companies like On and Hoka, and they're losing some market share there. And, you know, one of my main issues with Nike right now, and I see this is the constant problem that big companies have, is that they bring in a CEO. This is a relatively new CEO, Phil Donahue, right? John Donahue, Donahoe. There you go, John Donahoe, and they focus a lot on the numbers, margins, and with a big company like this, you know, they're wielding, they're large. There's a lot of sneakers moving around, a lot of apparel moving around, and they're. It's important to have that part, but it's also important to have innovation. It's important to have some vision towards what the brand should be and embody. And I think Nike just needs a bit more of that and less micromanaging the margins, because ultimately brands are about how the consumer feels. And while Nike, I think, still has good strength there, and that's why I think it should be on everyone's watch list, I think there's a few other issues plaguing Nike that's preventing it from really capitalizing on, you know, pretty much the best brand in the world. And so I like what you're looking at. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. You know, this is on our watch list for clients. We're still, we haven't bought it yet, but I'm going to take a look at it tomorrow. I may sell some put options. Lower around 75 tomorrow morning. Might do that, bring in some premium. It's a good way to play it. That's how I'm going to play it in my PA. And maybe at some point in the future, near future, might buy it for clients. So that's the way I'm thinking about it. I don't have an answer yet whether I'm going to pull the trigger. I'd have to look at it. I have to look at this earnings announcement. It just happened right after hours. But I like what you're looking at, that it's a good brand that I think just needs a little tweak, maybe a few acquisitions that could really spark, you know, innovation again, I think would be helpful. So That's Nike and Down Big After Hours. Thanks for the call, Sid. Now let's talk a little about the jobs market. Now, according to the official survey of employers, America has added 1.2 million jobs in net terms since the start of the year. But then if you go look at what is called the household survey, it looks a lot different. It says, actually, this year, 100,000 jobs have been lost. So how do you square that? That's a 1.3 million job difference. That's a lot in the job market. It's nearly 1% of the workforce. How can you be completely off on almost 1% of the workforce? Workforce is about 200 million workers. The gap has rarely been this wide. Now, the Fed is taking the more optimistic view of it. And the median forecast for interest rates this year is only one rate cut by year end, down from three a few months ago. So clearly, they're okay with what's happened in the jobs market over the past few months. Now, if you look today and the last few numbers, I think it's a bit more clear what's happening, that yes, the jobs market is weakening. And if the Fed will actually surprise with more cuts. And I think that's the case. I think there will be two cuts by year end. Why is that? Because if you dig into the details of these reports, it's pretty clear what's likely happening. Now, if the Fed gets it wrong, that's a hawkish mistake. And I think they will err on, avoiding that. Now, the payroll survey samples 600,000 work sites. And you say that's a big sample. It's a lot. Whereas the household survey, only 60,000 households. It's about 10% of the size. But they both have their flaws. First off, they both rely on models, which create errors. Now, the payroll survey must also try to account for failures of businesses. For example, if a business goes under, those people that were working there, they need to go find another job. And they're not counting the loss of the jobs of that business. Now, they do adjust it each year, but at the start of the year. So there's an adjustment period. But it makes that number a bit skewed if there's a lot of companies, going under and dissolving. The household survey relies on estimations of the overall population, which once again, that could be wrong. Now, what is the better way to look at it, to be frank? It's probably the unemployment rate. It avoids a lot of the problems with estimating the population, for example. The unemployment rate was at 3.5% in the middle of last year, 4% in May, and likely headed higher. Even though that's low by historical standards. And there's one industry example where this is pretty clear, that the jobs market is now on the weaker side. And it's restaurants. Past few years, it's hard to staff a restaurant. But the National Restaurant Association recently says their group and the latest monthly poll from their group found that restaurateurs are now more worried about sales than staffing. They're more worried about the broader economy and demand for their product than actually staffing and fulfilling that demand. So it's getting more and more clear. The jobs market has broken. The Fed will cut this year. At least once, probably twice. Now, here's another question from the InvestTalk YouTube channel. Carter Erickson says, do you like ITT at its current price? ITT, this is a name that's exploded from its COVID lows. And even last spring, the Silicon Valley Bank crisis lows, around under $300 per share. Now we're at $440. For the close today, but still down from its recent high, about $484 per share. So the softness you've seen in equities has certainly spread to companies like ITT. Now, what does ITT do? Well, they are in the industrial space. They manufacture critical components in the transportation, energy, and industrial markets. And earnings, what I like about it, they continue to go up. 2020, you had a down year in earnings, but only down 16%, which is not bad considering the you know what we were going through that year. And outside of that, earnings continue to march higher. $10 billion market cap. And once again, they manufacture critical components. I like that. These are important. Return on equity, 17%. Return on invested capital, 15%. $4.3 billion in free cash flow. And I'm a fan of that. I'm a fan of that considering its market cap of only $10 billion. It's about a 4% free cash flow yield. Not amazing, but good. And a clean balance sheet. Pretty much no long-term debt. Love that. Now, what are they doing with all that cash flow? Well, they're buying back shares. Now, they've slowed down buying back shares, so that's something to think about. They do pay a dividend, only 1%. A lot of people will say, oh, it's only 1%. I want to go and chase that 4, 5, 6%er. Thing is, this is a dividend grower. Currently 31 cents, 32 cents per share per quarter in dividend. And that's way up. 10 years ago, it was only at 11 cents. And they've continued to increase it pretty much every year. So I love that. And they have the balance sheet capacity to handle more growth there. And the cash flow capacity to handle more growth in the dividend. So that'll probably continue. So I like this. Now the question is, this recent pullback, is it done? It's definitely more neutral now. I would love to get it on another leg lower around the 100-day moving average, which would be around 100-week moving average, which would be around 375. Now it's at 444. But I would be legging into this on any weakness. I like ATT. This is a solid one, and it's certainly on our watch list as well. Now, 2024 is moving fast, and the proof is that we have one trading day remaining in the second quarter. We're halfway done. We're halfway there, folks. Isn't that crazy? It goes by like that. Well, throughout the last few years, I've been telling you, this is a different market environment, a new regime of inflation. And these times take different thinking, an adjustment, and shedding of the PTSD from 08. It's one thing it's probably the one aspect I have to coach clients the most about, which is wrap their head around how things have changed, the environment, the operating environment that we are investing in, and how that translates to trends in portfolios. And so if you need help understanding whether the trend in your portfolio is correct, aligned with a broader macro environment, whether your sector allocation is smart or not, whether your asset allocation is smart or not, based on your risk tolerance levels and your goals. These are all things we talk about on our free portfolio review assessments that we do via telephone or Zoom. And all you have to do is head over to our website and click on the portfolio review button in the top right-hand part of the screen. We'll go over everything that you're doing, everything that we do at KP Financial, which is practice parallel investing, first off, which we invest right alongside our clients. And we give unbiased guidance no matter what. No matter what situation you're in, whether you're still trying to do it yourself or you're looking for an advisor, either way, it's good for us. We just want to help you get aligned with the current market conditions that we are in. So I encourage you, once again, to head over to investtalk.com. Now, this is Invest Talk, now with more than, wait for it, 59 million downloads since it all began. Thanks to you and your friends. And our work continues in 30 seconds. So hang on.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future.
Would this be an opportune time to get into annuities?
Everyone's situation is different.
Get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce.
And so are their questions.
And I was just calling for your assessment of Blackstone Incorporated.
24/7, rain or shine, InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. 888-99-CHART.
This is Mike from Florida. I just had a question about bonds.
I really appreciate all the information you provide, and I'm sure you know probably the answer to this question, but I am 75 years old and now investing more in bonds and in stocks, and I've been listening to your program for a long time. That's really a big help, but I'm kind of new to bond investing. So the question is that let's say the coupon dividend or coupon is 1% or 1%, and then the yield to worst or yield to the end of the maturity, or I forget what you call it, is higher, like 4%. I don't understand how it could be higher than the coupon price. That's a question I had. And again, like I said, I really appreciate your program. Thank you very much.
All right, this is very simple. Bonds trade at par, which is 100. When they're issued, they're traded 100. And they can, in the secondary market, they can trade higher or lower. They can appreciate, they can depreciate, depending on where interest rates go from the time of issuance, depending on where credit spreads go, right? That underlying price can move. Now, if you're buying it above par, above 100, you're going to get price depreciation over time, because eventually when that price goes, when that bond goes back to maturity, you're going to get 100. So you buy it at 102, you're only getting back 100 at maturity. So you're going to take a capital loss, but you're still going to get the coupon. You're always going to get the coupon as long as there's no default, right? So you're always going to get the yield to maturity, or yield to worst, is going to be lower when it's trading at a premium. Okay, lower than that coupon rate. So the coupon rates, we'll call it 5%. If you're buying at 102, your yield to maturity is probably going to be 4.7, 4.8, something like that. Okay. If you're buying it at a discount, in your instance, like you said, coupon's 1%. You get appreciation if you buy it at a discount. So say below par at 90, because at maturity, you get 100 back. So you're getting the price appreciation from 90 to 100, and you're getting that 1% coupon each year. So combined, you have to look at combined price appreciation as well as the coupon rate. That's how bonds work, and that's why you can get a higher yield to maturity than that coupon rate, because there's two aspects to that total return. Now we're heading to our final break, and I'm ready to take your questions live at 888-99-CHART.
The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
I want to have your opinion on adding small and medium cap to the S&P 500, since the S&P 500 is only large cap. I'm thinking to add some mid cap, then small cap. Is it a good idea, or S&P 500 is enough to cover the United States stocks? Thank you so much.
I definitely think broadening out your allocation to mid and small cap makes sense for the vast majority of people, especially those that are willing to take the risk, right? Small and mid cap, that's higher risk. However, longer term, outside of the 2010s, if you go back, you know, when the cost of capital was something, those small and mid caps tend to outperform. They tend to have more upside, and they just tend to grow better. Now, mid cap is kind of the sweet spot of risk versus reward, because they tend to have steadier businesses and still a lot of upside to get into that large cap space. But the small caps, you know, they have even more growth, but they also have, you know, businesses that tend to be, you know, shakier, and so they can go out of business as well. Now, when you're investing in broad indexes or funds, you know, you kind of diversify that bankruptcy or risk away. But definitely mid caps for the vast majority of people, and small caps as well, especially when you look at the gap between earnings of large versus small, what multiples are trading at, you definitely get much better valuations and a better spread of exposures to different sectors when you're in that small and mid cap space. Thanks for the call. Now, lastly, let's touch a bit on the deficit. We know the deficit is high. A lot of people are spooked by it. The Congressional Budget Office estimates that the federal deficit this year will be $1.9 trillion, double what it was in 2019. And the worry is that eventually that will result in rising deficits, triggering a debt spiral. Sorry, rising bond yields, triggering a debt spiral. And, you know, it's impossible to know when that risk will manifest, because, you know, it's like, how do you go bankrupt? It's slowly and then suddenly, right? And that's kind of the path that, you know, we're on fiscally. But that doesn't have to play out in a terrible fashion, even in your lifetime. You know, it can last many decades. Or governments can allocate capital effectively to grow out of the debt. And that is what happened in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. Post-World War II, our deficits were very large compared to our GDP, but we invested those in, you know, the national highway system and infrastructure that allowed the economy to flourish. And to say that couldn't happen again is, you know, a bit hyperbolic. It could. Not guaranteed, but it could. Now, one solution that I think a lot of people will have, will continue to have for a long time, which is austerity. Getting the fiscal house in order. And I'm not necessarily against that. But to say that that will solve all the problems, well, you know, it's kind of like a leaky boat. You plug one and you create another. And in a world where those in power push for closing that budget gap, you probably get a large sell-off in stocks. Why is that? Well, it's pretty simple. There's a formula for profits. It's called the Kalecki-Levy formula, or profit equation. And it goes like this. Profits equal investment minus household savings, minus foreign savings, minus government savings plus dividends. Because incomes, people have income, right? Are they saving money or are they spending out in the economy? So that's clear. Same with foreign governments or foreigners. Are they spending into the economy or are they taking assets out? And same with government savings. Or in our case right now, the opposite of saving. Government spending. So government spending creates profits. Take that away, less profits. So you have to understand that dichotomy. So this is a situation that it's going to be very hard to manage, but as I've said many times, they will err on the side of spending. They will err on the side of not creating a debt spiral like 08. Eventually it might happen, you know, in the other direction with treasuries, but probably many years off. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play, and be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And I hope you've heard that Invest Talk podcast is also available in video form on our YouTube channel. Just head over there and search Invest Talk with two T's. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights.